two Vanderbilt political scientists who are closely following Fred Thompson's testing the water phase of a possible run for president are John Geer and Bruce Oppenheimer. I recently spoke with them for some analysis of the latest developments. How would you two assess Fred Thompson's chances at this point? And we'll start with John.
Well, I mean, there's a couple things. First of all, the chances of him running, I think, are still very, very high. And he certainly has all the pieces in place, and I think to pull out now would be a bit of a surprise. You know, I'm a believer that he's got a pretty good chance at winning the nomination, partly tied to the fact that the other contenders really haven't caught fire yet. I think any Republican in the general election is going to have a tough time because of the problems facing the Bush administration and the fact that there's an urge to change, and therefore the Democrats are likely to benefit from that. But Fred Thompson's formidable, so he may still be somebody who could end up being in the White House come January of 2009.
Do you agree or disagree, Bruce?
Well, I'm a little more skeptical than John is. One, he's gotten this very late start. In fact, he hasn't really announced his candidacy yet. That date of announcement keeps getting moved back. The amount of money you're going to have to raise to run a national campaign, which is effectively what you're going to need to do to compete on February 5th, is going to be larger than we've ever seen before. You know, whatever reasons he has for sort of only raising $3.5 million in June when they anticipated five, that's indicative of the fact that maybe they're not going to be able to raise money at the rate they think they will need to. So I'm skeptical about it. And I think the other thing that is the negative about Fred Thompson is we've never seen him tested in that sort of level of competition. He's never really run in a competitive Republican primary before. And he's, you know, except for the 1994 Senate election, it's the only time where he's really had a competitive situation. And 1994 was a very good year to run. So I still have to see that, number one, he's a good candidate, and two, that he can have an organization that can successfully run a campaign.
Do either of you think that was a mistake for him to throw out that figure of 5 million and then only do 3.4?
Well, I think it's not a mistake if you exceed it. It's obviously a mistake if you don't get there, and certainly they had some estimates that they were going to do. And so I think their expectations were that they put that figure out of 5 million, they'd exceed it, and they'd get a bump up from it. And, that's always the risk that you take.
John?
Yeah, I don't know how to interpret fully the $3.5 million or $3.4 million that he's raised, in the sense that you're asking people to contribute to a possible candidacy as opposed to an actual candidacy. And I think that part of the reason that number's down is when they made the $5 million prediction, they were also assuming that they were going to announce a candidacy at the end of July or sometime in July, which would provide a lot of excitement and people would contribute more just prior to it. And so that changed. And I think as a result, people felt less of a need to contribute. So I suspect the two things are linked. I'm not so worried about him being able to raise enough money. The interesting dynamic, I think, that hasn't yet unfolded, and I don't know which direction it will unfold, is that the Republican Party has at least some history of trying to rally behind a particular candidate. And the one thing that Fred Thompson has going for them, as opposed to Giuliani and Romney, and certainly McCain as well, is they're not acceptable to all segments of the party, but Thompson is. And I could easily see a lot of people coalescing around him come the fall and giving him quite a boost in that regard, both in regards to money but also endorsements. He has quite an impressive list of people within the House of Representatives, for instance, backing his candidacy. So I still think that he's in pretty good shape, but he's certainly made some mistakes, and that's inevitable. They're all going to make mistakes, and the question is, how will he react? And Bruce's comment is the right one. How will he deal with the kind of pressure that comes with running for president? That's the big unknown. And if he steps up to the plate, I think he'll be in really good shape. But if he shows any sign of weakness, it's going to be the sharks will start circling and he'll be in trouble.
Many people compare him to Ronald Reagan. However, Reagan had a lot more political experience by the time he ran for president, correct? Even the time he ran against Ford.
Well, he had more experience in the sense he had more gubernatorial experience. He was governor for 8 years in a very large, diverse state. And obviously that executive experience Thompson doesn't have. Thompson served roughly as long as in the U.S. Senate as Reagan did. There's, comparabilities because they're both actors. But, the thing that Reagan had even as in 1979 when he ran for the second time, or actually third time for the presidency, is he had a very clear message that he wanted to deliver. and a set of reasons why he wanted to be president. And that's really the key thing that these candidates all need. And Thompson hasn't yet articulated that message. And that's the other aspect of his candidacy that needs to come into play besides organization that Bruce mentioned and the fundraising and everything like that. And we'll see. They're all trying to work on various kinds of messages. I mean, if you look at the Democratic side, the big battle, which is barely a battle over diplomacy, whether you meet with these leaders right away, according to Obama, or you wait and vet them or have some sort of discussion, according to Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's amazing how that's become a big issue, where if you think about the actual differences, it's pretty minor. But it's a proxy for lots of things and looking for a way to get your voice and how you're going to deal with a post-9/11 world.
Have we ever had anybody that was a non-candidate running around acting like they were going to run for president but had not officially declared?
Well, I think, the timetable has changed, and especially because of the front-loading of the primaries and caucus states. It means that you have to get in early to raise money. And the other thing is you're getting in earlier because increasingly candidates are not relying on federal matching funds. So I think it's very hard to make those sorts of comparisons, sort of, at what point did you get in? I think the need to get in earlier now is largely driven by this need to raise money and by the front loading. The cost of entering this poker game has just been going up and up and up at a much greater rate than inflation. And that's why I think it's sort of critical. And John's very right. Maybe there will be this coalescing around Thompson, and maybe he didn't raise as much money because he wasn't an officially announced candidacy. But he continues to not be an officially announced candidacy. So I see that as sort of another cost of not announcing. If, in fact, the claim is, well, we are just having an exploratory committee, and therefore people won't give us money as quickly, then the longer you can continue as an exploratory committee, if that is the true reason you can't raise money, then that continues to be a detriment.
Do you think that Thompson is still trying to make up his mind, or is this just a way for him to get better prepared before announcing?
I think it's sort of like you've gotten on the airplane's on the runway, takeoff runway, and it's begun to taxi down the runway. Most of the time, when a plane starts taxiing down the runway for takeoff, it takes off. Every once in a while, a takeoff's aborted. So I think the odds of him not running are sort of the odds of, the aborted takeoff at this point, not something we would expect or anticipate.
What do you think, John?
Yeah, I think he's very likely to run. I mean, but Bruce is right that he could decide to abort it. And obviously, by the fact that he hasn't announced, that option remains viable. I take him at his word. The reason why he's not going to announce in August is it's a, quote, down month. I mean, it's very quiet in D.C. and not a lot of excitement. And he can just wait till September. The other side of the money issue, and it'd be interesting to see how this plays out. And I haven't seen any figures on it. But, for instance, Romney and McCain, and not though McCain's not been successful on this front, but Giuliani, they've raised a lot of money, but they don't necessarily have a lot of money in the bank. And so how much of that money has actually been used to build organization that will then pay off come these early states versus just general maintenance of the campaign? And that I don't have a good feel for, because if you've raised $50 million and spent $50 million, but only 10 of that went into organization, then the deficit that Thompson's at is a lot less than it would appear, because these people have spent through it, but they spent it on just campaigning, because running around getting limos, buying, getting the planes organized, just paying staff does cost money. So I don't know that we have a full handle on the kind of money that you need to run. And people have identified this kind of $100 million figure. I mean, unless something miraculous happened to the Thompson candidacy, raising $100 million by January 1 is not going to happen. But someone like Obama will probably raise $100 million. But how much will he have in the bank? The Democrats haven't been spending as much as the Republicans, so they may have more. But Thompson, by comparison to his other competitors, he's not at a huge disadvantage in absolute dollars. But how much of it's been used to build an organization in Iowa, for example?
The other thing about the money is that we have benchmarks. And one of the things you use to see how well a candidate is doing is how much money they're raising compared to other candidates. And there was a July 1 second quarter reporting, and so Thompson did not have to be a candidate, did not have to report, was not measured up against the other contenders. But October 1, by which time he will have announced, if he's going to announce, there will be a measure for that third quarter. And, it's sort of, is he going to say, well, I wasn't a candidate in July and August, and I waited till September you can't use that yardstick on me. My sense is that the media is going to use that yardstick come October 1. And that will influence other people as to saying, does this person really have backing? Can they be competitive? And so I think that's – it's not so much – not just whether you have the money to run in those primaries. It's whether you have raised enough money so that you're taken as a serious candidate.
And his first test would be which state? Would it be Iowa?
Well, Iowa leads off the caucuses, and then there's very quickly – well, Nevada's on the Democratic side. And then you have New Hampshire and then South Carolina right after that for the Republicans only. And then you move into Florida for both. And so there's a slightly different schedule for the Democrats and the Republicans. But basically, Thompson does not have a big presence now in Iowa, and he doesn't have a big presence in New Hampshire. He's not going to be judged super hard on those. South Carolina, he's doing reasonably well, and if he fell there, he'd be really hurting, I think. But one of the things that we don't, and when I say we, I'm talking about political scientists, don't have a good feel for how this system is going to work, because in previous years, we've talked about the role of momentum and the need to win these early states as a catapult to the later states. But because these later states are now so moved up that there's some people, Giuliani being a good example, and there's certainly been discussions within the Clinton campaign as well about whether you should run a national campaign rather than focusing all your attention on Iowa and New Hampshire. So Giuliani's taking a national strategy for the most part, whereas Romney is just the opposite. He's taken a very local strategy, focusing lots of time on Iowa and New Hampshire, believing that'll provide the springboard to success in the later caucus, later primaries and caucuses. And, you know, we'll have great explanations after the fact, to be honest. But right now, I'm torn between which way to proceed. I think you've got to do a little bit of both in the sense that you want to do well in some of those early states, but you want to have the organization and the money in place to be able to run this kind of national campaign that Bruce mentioned earlier on February 5th, where all these come in. And then the wild card now is Florida. How much will Florida matter? Because not only is it a state that's early on, but it's a really important state. It's a big state. It's a costly state. And how much will that provide doing well there, free media attention for these candidates? Because the half-life now of Iowa and New Hampshire is a lot shorter than it used to be. There used to be a number of weeks in between where you could build off that. And then let's say you do well in New Hampshire, but you fall flat in South Carolina. It used to translate into fundraising advantages. Well, it's not really going to be very, very big advantage there because you won't have enough time to do it. So, I mean, these people who are running these campaigns have thought lots and lots about it, and very hard and very careful, and they have come up with very different kinds of conclusions, which make me think we don't know what to expect, and it's going to be fascinating from our point of view, but of course we don't have a horse in the race.
The other thing is that there's very little incentive for anybody, even if they do poorly in those three or four early states, to get out before February 5th.
Yeah.
That they'll all go to the post February 5th because there are so many states involved.
And the Tennessee's is now
February 5th.
Yeah, it's part of that Mega Tuesday or whatever day. Yeah. I've heard it called different things.
So Tennessee could play a role this year, possibly.
Well, I think, you know, if you're talking about on the Republican side, if Fred Thompson didn't win in Tennessee, people would say, well.
Yeah, Tennessee becomes irrelevant on the Republican side if he runs.
Yeah.
Because it's an inside game. I mean, look at what the Tennessee delegation did immediately. Martha Blackburn switched from Romney to Thompson. And that's totally understandable. I'm not questioning her loyalty because she's doing the right thing, but it's a sign of Tennessee politics. And so he'll take that out of play. But on the Democratic side, it could still matter. But the other problem Tennessee faces is when you're in there with, 12 or 13 other states, you know, the media will pick on a couple of that will really matter. And, of course, California is the one that's likely to get the most attention. It'll be hard to break through. I mean, the attention of all these state legislatures is to try to make your state more prominent. And because everybody does the same thing, it actually kind of drives everybody a little bit out of the game.
Do you think the criticism of Thompson's wife is unfair given how early it is?
Well, I actually think the criticism of Thompson's wife is kind of an example of sexism. Here is a 40-year-old woman, attractive woman, married to Senator Thompson, who's, you know, 25 years or so older, and she's attractive and all like that. People are making these comments. If his wife was, you know, 57 years old and kind of average looking, there wouldn't be these kinds of comments. And this is a very intelligent woman. This is somebody who's worked for the RNC as a political operative, yet she's being, you know, getting coverage unfairly, I think, because of the fact that she's attractive and married to an older man. And, you know, it's not like this is, you know, the trophy wife or the trophy husband. That's all. I just think that's all unacceptable. Bottom line is that for whatever reasons, they're in love. They've had children. They have a family. And that seems to be not getting coverage, but rather the fact that she is, you know, a trophy wife or really good looking. And it would be different coverage. So I think all that is unfair. And I think a sign that people still haven't, you know, aren't willing to treat, you know, women equally, regardless of whether they look good or bad. I mean, think of the comments about how much cleavage Hillary Clinton shows. I mean, that's just a ridiculous, you know, undertaking and exercise. And so I'm disappointed by all of that, whether how much power she has or not. Most spouses matter. And so I think that's going to clearly the case. And this is somebody who's a political operative, too, and probably has, you know, very useful input. But I think it's sexism and more accurately just, you know, people who are still in a bit of the dark ages.
Way back with John F. Kennedy, did Jacqueline play much of a role in the campaign?
How old were you back then?
I think that she was seen, and this may have been more after he was elected than when he was elected, more as sort of this very
socialite,
attractive, very polished young woman, mm-hmm, who got a lot of attention because of who she was and what she was and what she represented.
She was very high society.
Yes, and quite a bit younger than any other previous first lady. People talk about how young John Kennedy was when he was elected. Jackie was quite a bit junior to him, and I'm trying to remember. I think barely 30 years of age.
I think she was 31, but I mean, doesn't matter whether it's 30 or 32. You know, this was a very young woman.
Yeah. I think that the question that's going to – that at least has come up in the last week or so is how much the spouse tries to influence or run the campaign. And that could be problematic.
Yeah, but it's doubtful that anyone has criticized Elizabeth Edwards, and she plays a very, very strong role.
Yeah, exactly. She's a comparable example. And, of course, Bill Clinton is totally, you know, because you want his expertise, but he's a male. He's former. I mean, it's not comparable, but – I just think that Senator Thompson's wife is getting a bit of an unfair shake here. Another reason why they may just choose to not run right away is let all these kind of problems get vetted out. Maybe they knew they were going to shake up the campaign and they wanted to wait till the testing of the waters. They wanted to wait, not announce and then shake up the campaign. They wanted to wait. You know, we're dealing with very limited kinds of information. But at the end of the day, despite all the qualms or whatever, Senator Thompson remains very high in the polls. Now, it's a very precarious position because people are voting for him with not a lot of information, but it does suggest a certain kind of potential. And he's taken some hunks out of Giuliani's poll standings, and I think he could easily move up further. Or if he nosedives and comes out of the gate badly, you know, he would be down in the single digits very rapidly.
The one thing that really hasn't been vetted much about Thompson that would get vetted more heavily, just seen the tip of the iceberg, is he has had part of his career as a lobbyist. Lobbyists are not held in the highest regard. And, you know, he has had clients over the year, and we've already seen some modest discussion of that. I suspect the day he becomes a candidate, sort of a discussion of who all his clients have been over the years, the good, the bad, and the ugly, start coming out.
Many people don't go from being a lobbyist to a candidate. They tend to go the other way, right?
Well, part of it with Thompson's career is it's a career that's it's three careers, you know. From a Senate, well, three to four, one, an inside person in the Senate as a staffer and then as a senator, and then as a lobbyist on two occasions at least, and as an actor on two different sorts of occasions. So I think you've had this jumping back and forth of careers. But I think that if you're going to look for an Achilles heel for Fred Thompson, it's probably his lobbying career. And I think that's the area where he's potentially most vulnerable. We are in the era of Jack Abramoff. You know, lobbyists are probably below the used car salesman in the public estimation. And, you know, I can just see that being played out in Republican nominating politics or even further in a general election.
I think that's right. And also the other side of Thompson, because of his multi-careers, is unlike a lot of the other contenders, he hasn't spent his entire life trying to run for this office of the presidency. And so certain parts of his life he hasn't really had vetted. At the same time, he hasn't necessarily highlighted them either, where if he was, you know, aspiring to be president, he would have been constantly highlighting every little thing. And so there are some probably other good things that he's accomplished that haven't been talked about as much, and they'll try to present that. But if you want to sit behind the big desk, as Bruce just said, you got to be prepared to be vetted, and the lobbying career is certainly going to come under a lot of intense scrutiny.
So if you had to make any predictions today, is Thompson in or out?
Well, it's easy to predict Thompson's in. I mean, those are pretty good odds. It doesn't mean that the plane might not take off, but I mean, I fly a lot, like, you know, a lot of us, and I'm, you know, usually confident it's not going to crash, it's going to take off. So I think that Thompson's running. But trying to predict him to win, you know, that becomes dicier. I mean, you can put odds on these things, and there's various groups that do. And I still think Thompson has a very good shot at winning the nomination, but it's hard to predict all these things. You know, 2003, 4 years ago, everybody was writing Kerry off at this point in time, and he goes on to win the nomination. And all the so-called experts and, you know, were wrong about that. And I certainly didn't see Kerry winning the nomination at this time. So after the fact, it doesn't look so random. But in point of fact, there's a good bit of luck.
Yeah, I think it's sort of two minds on it. One, that either he will do quite well and be very competitive, somewhat along John's scenario, or that the campaign will just simply fall on its nose. And I don't know which of those is more likely. But I don't sort of see a middle ground there, where he's, you know, marginally competitive, doing pretty well. I think it's going to be one or the other.
It's sort of like his movie roles. He stands out.
Yeah, you're getting outside my area of expertise.
No comment on that.
John Geer and Bruce Oppenheimer are Vanderbilt political scientists who have previously co-taught courses on campaigns and elections.